We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. This morning, we're happy to have back on the program here, first time this year, Phil Nixon. He's an extension specialist, now in crop sciences. And for some time now, he's been good enough to come and spend some time with us. Generally, when things are warm and the insects are most active, to help people deal with insect pest problems in the home and in the yard and garden. So we can be talking about anything that you might have inside the house, things that would attack your ornamental plants in the home landscape, things that would attack the food crops that you've planted out there. And what we can do is here try to answer the questions, tell you information about these pests. If you can call in and tell us what it is we're talking about, give us the best description that you can, then Phil will say, okay, I think I know what that is, and here's how to take care of it. He has pretty regularly over time said to people, well, now, is this something that you can actually live with, work around? If so, okay. If not, he can tell you what to do to get rid of them. That's what we do when he's here, and we're glad to have him back. 333-9455 is the number for Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one is 800-222-9455. And you may also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Either way, anyway, you're welcome to call in, write in with your questions. Thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
Right off the top, I think that probably the thing we should be talking about is the emerald ash borer, and give us an update.
Well, just recently they found emerald ash borer infested trees at the rest area on Interstate 57 near Loda, which puts it pretty close and well within the listing area. Otherwise, we have infestations in Bloomington, Shenoah, Peru-LaSalle area, and then evenly infestations or uneven infestations, I should say, but widespread in the Chicago metro area all the way out through Kane County. This is an insect that so far we have not had a single tree survive an attack without being treated to protect it. It attacks healthy ash trees, kills them. So far, the tally is somewhere around 113 million trees killed in the United States. None survived. So it's pretty well a death sentence if it gets into the tree. We recommend that the insect will tunnel underneath a bark and over the span of a few years girdles the tree to where it dies, and it goes all the way down to below soil line, about 3 or 4 inches. So it kills a tree from the top all the way to the bottom. A tree will take usually about 6 years to die once it gets attacked, and the insect will come out of D-shaped holes that are about an eighth of an inch across. There's a very common insect that comes out of 3/16 inch oval holes. Being definitely D-shaped flat on one side and only an eighth of an inch across is very critical to this insect. We recommend either removing the trees when they're attacked or treating the trees, and we recommend treating trees if you're within 15 miles of a known infestation. No need to treat the trees farther out than that. There are insecticide treatments. If an insect has not gotten into the tree yet or the trees are not been attacked heavily in the neighborhood, then you can use imidacloprid, which is sold to homeowners as bare advanced tree and shrub insect control, which can be applied as a drench to bare soil or within 2 feet of the trunk of a tree, around a tree, on an annual basis to protect a tree. If the insects get into the neighborhood and are actively attacking trees, we recommend switching to triage. It's emamectin benzoate, so it is triage, pronounced that way. It's spelled triage, and this is a commercial-only applied material, which is injected into the tree and will protect a tree for about 2 years on an injection. Injection prices are going to be $100 to $150 per tree. Trees that are a foot or less in diameter are much easier controlled than very large trees. We find we don't have enough research on this insect since it was just discovered in the U.S. in 2002 to know how many, how long trees will live. We know that trees are treated with imidacloprid, if heavily attacked over a period of years, initially look good but eventually die. The triage, we don't have as much longevity information on. They look good for 3 or 4 years, but then the imidacloprid look good for 3 or 4 years too. But it, we do know it kills more of the beetles and does a better job at controlling the insect, so we're hopeful that that will allow long-lasting survivability of a tree. For those areas that are funded by public monies, such as park districts, townships, municipalities, etc., they have taken the attitude, rightfully so, I believe, in removing the trees that are attacked or even removing trees before they become infested to spread out their removal costs because essentially having to have a tree treated at $75 a year for forever is not probably a good long-term use of tax money. So they will treat a few trees, but most trees will be removed, and so people that have street-side trees need to realize that situation and cope with it when it occurs. It's not a matter of if this will get here, it's when. And right now, doesn't look good for ash trees, which make up should be only make up about 5% of our tree population, but in reality, in many areas, 10 to 20% of our trees are ash trees.
Yeah. So it sounds like if you on your own property have ash trees, probably now it's a good time to think about what your long term plan for those trees are going to be, and that you have to know that sooner or later that you're going to have to take the tree down.
Yeah, the insect moves at about a half a mile a year on its own. And it will move a little bit faster at a certain time in its infestation period. But so, in other words, people in Champaign-Urbana don't need to be treating trees. If they want to preventively cut down trees and get new trees started, if they have a lot of ash trees and want to take out some and start new trees to replace them, That is a very proactive stance, which might be have some value, but certainly not treating the trees yet. But if you're in Paxton, you need to be concerned about treating the trees or watching the trees or doing something sooner because you're close enough to be a attacked fairly soon. The area of infestation has the trees are being removed at the rest areas. They've all been removed on one side, and I think are about to be removed on the other side, two different rest areas. We found them only initially in one. But the area around is relatively heavily forested, and ash being a native tree, that has probably spread out and gotten into the native forest in the area.
Okay. Phil Nixon, our guest this morning. You have insect pest problems in the house or outside in the yard. Give us a call, and he'll try to help you out. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. And we have several callers. In fact, the lines are all full, and we'll take them right in the order they came in, starting with Urbana and line one. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, good.
Well, you know, just listening to the infestation story right there, certainly I don't feel so bad about mine anymore, I guess. Perspective is a wonderful thing. I'm sure you've heard this about 100 times, Asian ladybugs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Multicolored Asian lady beetle. Uh-huh.
Yeah, lady beetle. I'm going to preface this, too, is that I've talked to a few people and tried a few things, but I've not really come with a lot of success. One, our house is 100 years old or so.
Mm-hmm.
So people say, oh, seal up your house, and I just laugh.
That's what we call a porous house. Yes.
Yeah, that's porous house, yes. We have, like, sash weights and lots of southern exposure, and our house is a lighter color. And, we were vacuuming up drifts of these critters. And we've had a few of them, a few more. This year was kind of critical mass for me. And the second thing is really that when we do try to treat or do anything, we try to be a little bit more friendly environmental than, you know, ooh, where's the DDT? So if there's some way to tackle these bugs in some way come next fall, because we just kind of started seeing the last of them. You know, it warms up, we open up the windows, and it seems like they're like, okay, thanks for the vacation, we're going to leave now. So anything that you can say, like a mild spray, a way to treat, something that has some history of being effective. There's these awful little lights that you can get. Mm-hmm. I've heard they're completely ineffective. It's like, feel free to, you know, just take a $10 bill and a $20 bill and burn them and you get the same effect.
Yeah,
anything you have to offer, I'll go ahead and listen offline.
Okay.
Thank you.
First off, and I realize this was made kind of in a passing facetious notice, but there are some people that don't realize this, but DDT has been off the market for most uses for 37 years now. It was taken off in 1973. So, just in case somebody's still out there thinking that people are still spraying that, they really are not. But at any rate, the point is that multicolored Asian lady beetles are worse in the central Illinois than they probably have been before. And the reason is, as many of you may remember, the floating flying gnats of last fall. These were soybean aphids that were migrating. We had higher numbers of soybean aphids in our soybean fields than we'd ever had before in central Illinois. And multicolored Asian lady beetle is a major predator of that insect, and so there were more of them this year than there ever have been. So the good part about this is the chances are unlikely that we will have that high a number before. Probably the reason we had so many soybean aphids last year was because of the cool temperatures with the consistent fronts coming out of the north, blowing the soybean aphids from the northern part of the state down here. And then the cooler temperatures allowed them to survive better. They don't do well at temperatures below 87 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's an unusual winter summer when we have temperatures to stay below that level. So those put all together will say we should not have as many soybean aphids, which means we should not have so many multicolored Asian lady beetles. But like anybody else, weatherman included, I don't promise anything. They will come in through cracks and crevices into the house. They do not reproduce inside. They will hide inside your wall void. And as they will come out, when it starts to get a little bit warmer, when that wall void gets warmer, the temperatures from the inside are relatively consistently warm. But when you have a sunny day or a warmer day in the wintertime, that warms up that wall void. They become active. Their temperature gets above 50. They get active, 50 degrees Fahrenheit. We'll move to light, which is around windows. They'll get in through cracks and crevices. We recommend keeping them out of the house by caulking, particularly around the windows and window framing, out jutting and in jutting corners of the house, eaves, those sorts of areas. This will help your energy bill as well, of course. There are sprays that can be done, deltamethrin or other pyrethroid insecticides that can be applied by a pest control operator, an exterminator, to the outside of a house. That done in the fall will provide you a year of protection, which is easy to do since they only come in the fall. But inside, we recommend vacuuming them out up if you find them. As you find them, dump the sweeper bag outside because not all of the beetles are killed in the vacuuming process. And they will chew, I found out, they will chew their way out through paper vacuum bags, which is kind of an interesting sidelight. So not only do you have a beetles not being kept, but when you turn on the vacuum, then dust blows out all through your room. Not a good thing. But otherwise, the lights that the gentleman indicated, you can buy light traps that are used for indoors to attract these insects and kill them. My experience with them has been similar to his. They don't work. I think they didn't work for me because I was not able to get the building dark enough. Had Venetian blinds and you had too much light pollution coming in for the windows regardless, even at night. I think they will work in very dark situations. Had some reports from people using aerosol sprays that had some residual effect. Research has not shown that to be an effect, but in other words, you can try something like a flying crawling insect spray and see around windowsills and see if that helps. But really, it's just something we live with. They do not reproduce inside the house. This time of year, they will soon be going outside for the summer, and then the problem will start all over next year. Hopefully not as large.
Yeah, so inside, the best thing to do is mechanical removal.
Mechanical removal.
And is there really anything that you can do if you have them inside to encourage them to leave, or you just have to wait until they decide it's time to go?
Well, really, there's not anything really feasible to do so. For instance, we had them coming out inside the tack room in the barn, and on a nice warm day, my wife opened the windows with no screens, and most of them flew outside. That's not something that normally you can do in a house mm-hmm. because what goes out also comes in. That would be an effective method when they're very active and it's warm outside to kind of lure them outside a little bit, but And but on the other side of a coin, that's not something that's really practical for most houses.
Okay. Phil Nixon is our guest. He's an extension specialist in crop sciences here at University of Illinois. And from time to time, particularly here in the summer, he's on the program and we talk about insect pest problems in the home. And if you have some bug issue inside or in the yard, you can call in and he'll see if he can help you out. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. And next is someone in Champaign. Line two, right here. Hello.
Hi, yeah. I'm calling in with a ground bee problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm new to this area, and I've noticed in my yard now probably around 100 bees when they're really active. They're flying really low to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I have also noticed a kind of a chalky, soft rock white substance coming up from the ground. And I don't know if these two things are related, but the chalky white stuff only seems to be where the bees are coming up from. And so I'm wondering, the bees are about a quarter of an inch long, and they have fuzzy tops and smooth blackish bottoms.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering what kind of bees they are and the best way to get rid of them.
Okay, these are what we generally call burrowing bees. They may be in a couple of different families of bees. They all have some things in common, and that is that they nest in the soil. They tend to like drier areas, and although I have not noticed it in Illinois, colleagues throughout the country, my colleagues out in other parts of the country have indicated that many times watering the area and irrigation will reduce them and cause them to leave an area. I have them in a part of my garden that tends to be the dampest part of the garden, but I don't irrigate so it's hard to say. Whether that will really work in Illinois or not. What I have found is they are very, very unlikely to sting. How unlikely to sting? I've had them in my garden, and I've been in there on my hands and knees pulling weeds around them. I have rototilled through that area and have never, ever been stung or even seriously bothered. So you can live with these insects, in my opinion. If you need to feel like you need to get rid of them, Carbaryl sold as 7 in a dust form in drier areas around the nest should cause them to pick up this insecticide and they will spread it through. These are individual bees, so each individual bee would have to pick it up to be killed. It's cannot be spread through a colony like for instance for yellow jackets, but it works the same way. Realize on the plus side that these are exceedingly important pollinators, very, very useful, and really unlikely to sting. So I would say live with them if you can see any way possible to do so. This is part of nature we really want to keep. And generally, they're going to be more of a problem in bare soil areas. So if you have them in certain areas near a back door or something, you can get more foliar cover. Grasses or ground covers may help reduce the numbers as well there.
No, that's great. I actually was trying to think of a way to coexist with them. And at this point, they are so thick that I can't really get into my garden. So would you recommend maybe spraying it down with water before I work in the garden?
That might be, well, they'll probably just come right on out, regardless of just spraying just before you work. I've actually, like I said, I've been on my hands and knees in areas where there's been 100-plus of those and buzzing and flying right around my hands and so on and never been bothered. I've done this numerous times over the years, probably 15 or 20. And, you know, most of a problem with these insects is between our ears.
Got it.
Okay. So if you can bring yourself to go in there regardless, and I got it, even myself, I had trepidations about it, but, you know, I mean, I was working heavily through this garden area. They were all around me and I never got stung and so on. These are solitary bees. And when you're a solitary bee, if you're going to attack a giant such as us, which is compared to them, that's what we are, you can assume that you're going to get killed. If you're only the only one in the group, you're not saving anything if you get killed. You have ended your gene line, so to speak. So scientifically, it does not make sense for these insects to sting. Now, where you get a colony where you have maybe a couple thousand yellow jackets of a wasp or even honeybees where you have several tens of thousands, then the loss of individuals for the furtherance of a colony makes more sense. But where you're a single individual, and this is what these are, these are solitary bees. They just tend to put their nests next to each other. Each one of them is in charge of laying eggs, rearing young, defending the colony, all that sort of thing. They'd rather go, it makes more sense to them to go start a new colony than to give up their life to get rid of you.
I understand. Oh, okay. Great. Okay. Is the chalky white substance part of their nests?
I'm not familiar with that, although bees produce their feces is uric acid, which tends to be chalky white, and this may be what you're seeing. I have not noticed it previously, but that may be what's occurring. That's my best guess on that. If it is, it's not a big deal. People go out and buy uric acid to put on their lawn, so that's a good fertilizer.
Great. Thank you so much for your help.
Thank you for the call. Let's see. On again to Urbana, I think, is the next call here. Line 3. Hello.
Hi. Back in the fall, just about dusk, somebody knocked on the door wanting to sell me firewood. And I said, I can't deal with it right now. Can you give me a business card? And they did, and they went off. And I'm disinclined to deal with somebody, especially when I can't see what their goods are. But after the next day I looked at the business card and it was from somebody from Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably should have reported them because they probably are transporting firewood through and from places where it's, you know, quarantined. Anyway, I'm just wondering, I wanted to give people a heads up about this, for the future. Presumably they will not be selling firewood at this time of the year, but, is there somebody I should pass this information on to when I find the business card?
Okay. Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up because one thing I forgot to mention in my overview of Emerald Ash Borer is that we feel that the most likely way for this insect to get around at this time is on firewood, and we recommend firewood not be transported out of the county or used more than 50 miles from where it was grown. And not only for emerald ash borer, but there is a whole slew of things that, particularly in Eastern Europe, and we're starting to do a little more trade with those people in other parts of the world, that could easily move in firewood and be very just as much of a devastation to various trees and shrubs, as to other species of trees and shrubs in this country, as emerald ash borer is to ash. So a good rule of thumb is not to buy firewood that has come from more than a local situation. Firewood that would be moved across state lines particularly is regulated by USDA, and it should have a seal on it if you go to your local filling station or other location where this type of firewood is commonly located. You'll see a seal on it, or should have a seal on it, which is a couple inches wide that says that it's been treated wood or has been taken care of properly. They'll heat treat this. They'll remove a bark. There's several things that they can do to make it so that it's not going to transmit emerald ash borer. In this situation, we only have one small infestation of emerald ash borer we're aware of in Missouri, and that's at the northern edge of a boot heel, in a federal campground. So we're hopeful that probably it did not have emerald ash borer in it. But on the other side of a coin, state of Illinois is quarantined for movement of firewood outside of the state. If you want to report a situation like this, if you go on to computer and internet and Google Emerald Ash Borer, Illinois Department of Agriculture, you will come up with the Illinois Department of Ag website, and there is a location there to where you can report people that are bringing out firewood. And that is the agency that would be the hammer on these people that would try to get them into compliance.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. And back to another caller here, line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm calling from Champaign. I have a problem with odorous house ants.
Okay.
Moved into our house about 3 years ago, and every winter since then we've had odorous house ants in the house. And this past winter it was worse than before. They're mostly in the bathroom and in the kitchen. And we do have a cat that's sometimes messy when he eats.
Okay.
And one of the places they're showing up most is near there. We've tried taro ant poison, the liquid, and we've also recently tried Max Force baits,
okay,
which I think might be more of a protein bait.
Yes, it is.
Bait. But it just really didn't reduce their numbers.
Okay. Odorous, yeah, Odorous house ant is an ant that can nest both outside and inside the house. They are more likely to switch what they're feeding on than other ants. So what the caller did was correct. You start out with a sweet bait, which is taro ant bait or Grant's ant bait or sweet type baits, and then went to a protein bait, Max Force bait, or Combat bait would be another one that's a good protein bait. And usually, if they don't come to one bait, they will come to the other. This will typically reduce their numbers somewhat. Odorous house ant is probably the hardest ant to try to control. It is best controlled with baits. It's a difficult thing to try to get a handle on. I would continue to try the different types of baits and see if and realize that this ant will tend to switch what it's interested in feeding on very quickly. So you might even want to put out both of them at once to see if that will actually attract them to a certain extent. But that's that would be what I would recommend. And the nest is very likely in this part of the state outdoors, but it could be actually inside the house.
Is there anything I can do during the summer outside to help alleviate the problem?
If you have them during the summer, that's an indication that very likely you have an indoor nest. So doing something outside would have very little effect. Foundation spray of permethrin would keep the insects keep the ants from coming in from the outside. But as the temperature warms and the temperature stays reliably above 50 degrees Fahrenheit outside, they will likely switch their foraging behavior to outside. And if you have them during the middle of the summer, except when it's real, real hot and they're coming inside because it's cooler, then chances are you have indoor nests. So probably treating around the outside foundation won't make any difference.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. We have as our guest in this part of Focus, Phil Nixon. He's an extension specialist and is in crop sciences, and his specialty is insect pests in the home. And for, a long, long time here, he's been here on a pretty regular basis, certainly in the summer when the insects are most active, to try to help people deal with pest problems in the house and in the yard and in the garden. So if you've got a particular problem, tell us about it, and he will suggest how to deal with it. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. Are odorous house ants, do they smell bad?
Actually, the colony will have a particular odor, and if you squish them, they do have a definite odor. It's been described before, and I can't remember off the top of my head. I think this one's one that they say smells like crushed hazelnuts or filberts, but I'm not certain on that. We do have a citronella ant, which is common around here, or a large yellow ant that if you squish them or you get around where they are, it will smell like citronella or a citrus type odor. Mm-hmm. So various ants have various odors, and odorous house ant does a definite odor. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody here on a cell phone, next line 2. Hello.
Hi, I also have a question about ants. We get ants around the kitchen when the weather warms up, and we put out baits, and that usually takes care of it. But last week, we're having some outdoor siding replaced, and mm-hmm. when the contractor took off the old siding, he thought he saw termite damage. And so we called Terminix, who came in and looked at it, said it's old damage, and the termites are not active. Well, after Terminix left, the contractor noticed ants, so he thinks it's wood ant damage. And I'm wondering, what do wood ants even look like? And perhaps those ants that I see around the kitchen when the weather warms up, are they the same thing?
Very unlikely. Wood ants or carpenter ants are our largest ants that we're going to see inside the house. And they're going to be black, and they're going to be at least a quarter of an inch long. There may be an occasional one that's even larger than that. But they're essentially the only wingless ant we're going to see inside that's going to be at least a quarter of an inch long. So, and the species that comes in the eastern United States is always black. Carpenter ants will tend to tunnel will make clean tunnels. They will be tunnels that will be typically a very small area, typically no more than a couple feet along a 2x4. So the amount of damage they do is relatively minor. You'll see advertisements that say that Carpenter Ants are the second biggest destroyer of wood in the country or in Illinois. And that's true. Termites make up about 97% of the wood damage by insects, and Carpenter Ants the next 1.5%. So being number two is way, way far back in the pack. They're not lying. They're just not telling everything. Carpenter ants do not eat wood, whereas termites do, the amount of damage is just in the area of their nest, and they normally get into an area that's damp, so we prevent carpenter ants primarily by caulking cracks and crevices and taking care of roof leaks and so on as soon as we know about them. The nest, if there's a carpenter ant nest found, it can be treated by soaking it with an aerosol ant and roach spray, or just replacing the wood that's damaged. Usually the nest is kind of hidden, like underneath siding, things of this nature. Termites will bring mud up in their tunnels to keep the humidity high. And so the presence of mud or debris in the tunnels is an indication that it's more likely to be termites. Carpenter ant tunnels are just sparkly clean. It's amazing how clean they are usually. So that makes a difference. If termites were actually in there and carpenter ants got into the area or any other type of ant, that would explain why the termites are no longer there. The mortal enemy of termites are ants, pretty much of any species, and they will kill off the termites, particularly smaller ants will. So maybe the ants that you have been having a problem with in your kitchen were actually a godsend. They may have been eliminated your termite problem for you. And for treatment of ants in a kitchen or something like that, we'll recommend, which are going to be smaller than 1/4 inch typically, we'll recommend what I mentioned to the other caller, either a protein bait such as Combat or a sweet bait such as Taro or Grants to rotate them if necessary if they stop going to one.
Yeah, that makes sense about the damp wood, because the reason we were replacing the siding is there was a water problem.
Mm-hmm.
So they probably are ants causing that trouble.
Very likely.
Okay. And so now that we've replaced the damp wood, should I spray every now and then?
If you replace the damp wood, I would just keep an eye out for large black ants. And if you see more than 10 a day, that's an indication you have a nest somewhere. Sometimes by putting out honey that will cause in the evening, they're nocturnal ants, putting out honey in the evening, they will find it and trail back directly to their colony. So you get a pretty good idea where they're located. And then comes the problem of actually locating the nest and eliminating it. There aren't good baits to be put out for carpenter ants. Elimination involves primarily finding a nest inside the wall or in the roof or something of this nature. They can also, if you have fewer than 10 ants a day, they're probably coming from outside nests, from trees, dead wood in trees and so on outdoors. And then you just remove individuals as you see them in the house. In other words, you stomp the bejeebers out of them. But other than that, you really don't need to do a whole lot about it. If you see more than 10 a day, you've probably got a nest in the house, and trying to locate that and eliminate it is a good idea. On the other hand, living with it is still an option, too, because these do not really cause much in the way of structural damage.
Great. Thank you very much.
Right, you're welcome.
Thank you. And again, we keep going here. The next person would be in Chicago, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, I always use this stuff for indoor ants, stuff called Taro. You just put a couple mm-hmm. drops down and they take it back to the nest or something. But I kind of adopted a new view on these interior ants. I mean, I was thinking about it. What are they really doing? I mean,
they're a nuisance.
They're eating microscopic particles of food that you neglected to clean up. Maybe they're just helping clean the house, you know?
Exactly true. Yeah. and they're really just a nuisance. And so, again, it's another one of those things where they're not really causing any serious damage. Sometimes you get debris coming out, but it's just because of walls or something. That's just because every one of them has 6 feet and they track stuff out. It's not a matter of them doing any real serious damage. So
I mean,
generally they're just. In fact, we call them as a group nuisance ants, and that's exactly all they are. They're a nuisance. Yeah, we don't like to see them in our houses. That's as much a pest as they are.
the bug that drives driving me nuts is these Asian beetle, these Asian,
Right, multicolored Asian lady beetles, which are also only a nuisance, but because of their numbers, they become much more of a nuisance.
Whew, man.
Yeah, well, all ladybugs protect themselves by having their blood smell bad.
You don't even have to squish them. All you have to do is kind of pick them up and flick them outside.
That's right. They reflexive bleed, and when they do that, they're able to bleed by reflex, and their blood smells bad. That's their method of protection against predators.
So what do you do with them?
Just vacuum them up is what we recommend. And caulking cracks and crevices, particularly around windows, keep them from getting in the fall.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
I have heard people before talk about the lady beetles having an odor, mm-hmm. and I've never noticed that.
You haven't gotten real close to your ladybug.
Well, I guess not. I guess not.
And the interesting thing is that people say, well, these smell bad and the others don't. Well, they all smell bad. That's... being an entomologist and collecting insects with what's called an aspirator, which you suck air out and it forms a vacuum and sucks the insects into a tube, you always had to avoid sucking up a ladybug because of any kind, because you'd get this bad taste in your mouth because they all pretty well, all of them that I've ever run across do this, and they do this by what's called reflexive bleeding. They're able to bleed on command, so to speak, mm-hmm. and their blood has this terrible odor and taste to it.
And I've also heard people talk about them biting.
Lady beetles will bite.
They
typically are not going to break the skin. If you have real soft skin, they might break the skin. I've had a couple reports of it. But generally, just kind of feels like a pinch, it's again a nuisance. It's an irritation, but it's not anything that's dangerous.
Okay. Well, I guess maybe at our house we've been lucky that the numbers are. That we've seen in our house are pretty small.
Yeah, I've been blessed with a tight house. I live in a country where I get gobs of them, and we get relatively few compared to what many people get.
All right. We're here. We've got about 15 minutes maybe in this part of Focus. Phil Nixon is our guest. He's an extension specialist dealing with entomology problems, and insect pests is what we talk about when he's here on the show. Insect pest problems in the home or in the garden, in the yard, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. And next, our next caller is in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Good morning. I have two problems. One is, I don't know if it's a problem. It's, again, you can live with some tiny red ants in the bathroom. And typically in the past in this house, I've had probably carpenter ants in the spring. They appear for about a month, and then they disappear. But I haven't had them since the 2 years I've moved back into this house. But I've had these tiny red ants all winter in, not hordes, but, several, probably about 5 or 10 a day that I see. And then the other thing I have is carpenter bees on my patio. I have a covered patio with 2x4s holding up one of those wavy translucent fiberglass roofs. And there is a little gap right under the eaves where they can come in. Otherwise, it's screened. And so they were there the last 2 years. And they're not that much of a nuisance. What I'm wondering is, do they pollinate? Because I'm considering putting a couple of plants on my patio, and I'm wondering if they would do the pollination.
Okay. Small red ants, particularly if they're exceedingly tiny, the type of things that look like they might go in through a salt shaker or something of this nature, kind of a yellowish red, could be pharaoh ants. And pharaoh ants take a special sweet bait, typically with a mint jelly base, to get something like that. You'd almost have to go on the internet to find it. Generally, these ants will swarm to anything sweet. So a good way to tell whether you've got a pharaoh ant problem is take a little piece of bread, put some jelly on it, set it out. And if it's absolutely covered with those ants in about 15 or 20 minutes, you've got pharaoh ants. Pharaoh, same as the Egyptian pharaohs is the way the name is. These will nest inside the house, and if you use a spray or anything, you cause them to split up into many colonies and becomes a bigger problem. Being in the bathroom, I would guess they may not be feral ants, maybe some other species which would be controlled with your typical baits we've been talking about previously, protein bait such as a combat ant bait or a sweet bait such as taro or Grant's ant baits. Either of those should work fairly well. As far as the carpenter bees are tremendous native pollinators. Again, very, very important out there. Some research done on them indicates they do a tremendous amount of pollination. They will sting, but they're reluctant to sting. You about have to grab one and mess with it to get it to sting. These are going to look like bumblebees. They're stocky, and they will make tunnels into the wood for their young. To provision with pollen and to lay eggs into. And these holes will be either a quarter of an inch or a half an inch in diameter, depending on the species of carpenter bee involved. They tend to attack unfinished wood. And so not always does this work, but generally if the wood is painted or has a coating varnish on it or a coating stain, they're not likely to go into it. They will go into water-treated wood or penetrating stained wood. So usually a coat of paint will keep them out. Once they get in, putting Carbaryl or Seven Dust around the opening will kill that individual. You want to leave the opening there until sometime in the summertime, or sometime till the wintertime, and then caulk the hole and paint over the surface. There probably are going to be young ones that are going to come out of a wood, and caulking the hole that the female makes each one of them make their own hole. And so instead of having one hole, you may have 6, 8, 10, 15, 20 holes along a piece of wood. So leaving the hole open is recommended. But you're correct. They are exceedingly good pollinators and will pollinate those plants that you have.
So they're not picky about what they pollinate?
No, not particularly. They're much better pollinators than honeybees. Honeybees tend to be picky about what they pollinate. Don't like to pollinate legumes because legumes grab their head and grab their legs. The flowers have little trap doors in them and stuff that they don't like a whole lot. And so they actually have bumblebees rather than carpenter bees, but the activity is pretty similar. They'll use bumblebees in the West to pollinate alfalfa, which is a legume, which they can't get honeybees to do very good. Honeybees will go to something else rather than alfalfa because alfalfa blossoms grab the bees to make sure they get a good dose of pollen on them before they leave, and honeybees are wimpy, don't like that.
Okay. Real quick, I have a homemade ant poison that's a sweet that's really effective. Can I just give it? It's got 5 ingredients.
You can give it, although we cannot recommend it because we can't recommend something that's not been labeled as an insecticide. But if you wish to give it, that's fine.
Okay, it's 5 teaspoons of sugar, a quarter teaspoon of boric acid, one teaspoon of honey, and then add warm water to 100 milliliters.
What you're describing is almost the same formula for taro ant bait.
If you happen to have boric acid, which is a little hard to find.
And boric acid is what's used to control the ants in taro ant bait and also Grant's ant bait. So you're essentially buying a pre-made mixture that's very similar to what you just described. And the advantage of buying it pre-made is first you don't have to mess with it. Boric acid is toxic even though it's organic. And also you get a finely ground boric acid, which is going to be very effective in controlling the ants better than some other sources you might find.
No, this works really well.
It should work, but it's
hard to find.
It should work, but like I said, it's very similar to what's a commercial available product.
Mm-hmm. All right,
thank you. And just real quick, as we've talked about the two basic kinds of baits for the ants, the sweet and the protein, at different times of the year, depending on
what's happening in the colony,
one or the other will be more effective?
Yeah, essentially, a sweet bait, a sugar or something, or nectar or something like that, is primarily what the adults use to feed themselves. The larvae that are legless and in the colony, which when you open up an ant colony and it looks like the ants are carrying off eggs, those are way too big to be ant eggs. Those are actually larvae or pupae, and those larvae are legless and are fed by the adults, and they require protein. They are carnivorous. And so in the natural world, the ants are picking up, killing insects, many of them pest insects like caterpillars and so on. They're finding dead insects around and so on, and they're feeding these to their larvae. And so when the colony is building, which is commonly the case at this time of year, because you don't want to have very many mouths going through to winter. You don't have that many to feed. As you get into the spring, they will start really gearing up and producing a lot of young in the colony, which means they have a lot of larvae, which means they're going to come to protein baits. As you get into the middle of the summer, generally, or later in the summer, they will go to you'll usually have enough adults around. In fact, they may actually be wanting to reduce their colony for winter. And in that case, sweet baits tend to be more effective. However, in ants that come inside the house, particularly things like odorous house ants, they will shift back and forth as to what they like so much that they become very, very difficult to control. They may go after a protein bait for 2 days and go to a sweet bait for a couple of days and back to a protein bait. And it can drive you crazy trying to stay on top of particularly an ant like odorous house ant.
All right. Well, we have some other calls here. We'll try to get as many as we can. We have maybe about 5 minutes left. And next is someone in Ottawa, Illinois, line number 4. Hello.
Hello. I have a question about fire ants. And is there a chance of fire ants invading Illinois?
We hope not. Imported fire ants have gotten as far north as Nashville, Tennessee, and then they got a couple cold winters, and they went back to the southern border of Tennessee. To my knowledge, they haven't gotten back that far north. But if you look on a map and you look at Nashville, Tennessee, and you extend it over to Illinois, that's not very far south of Carroll. So it's possible they could get into the state. Certainly they could be brought in, and we feel that it may have happened a couple times, a nursery stock or something in the soil ball. But they have not seemed to have been able to survive or have been eradicated, best we know, where they have shown up. So we don't feel that it's warm enough here for fire ants to be able to maintain red imported fire ants or black imported fire ants. We do have a native fire ant that occurs in Illinois. It's in the same genus as the imported fire ant, but it is not particularly nasty and will sting you if handled roughly. Then to stay outside is normally not a problem.
I just noticed when I look at the weather that the temperature in southern Illinois south of Carbondale is sometimes 10, 15 degrees warmer than Chicago.
That's correct. We would anticipate, even with global warming, that it would take a couple centuries for it to warm enough for them to get into southern Illinois. But nature tends to fool you. So it's always, it's a definitely unlikely, but we're not going to say it can't happen.
Well, we've sort of got water barriers in the Mississippi, the Wabash, and the Ohio rivers, and I just wonder, would they be coming in on vehicles or?
Yeah, they'll come in. They'll hitch rides on barges. They'll hitch rides on, and they have found infestations, I believe, on barges on the Mississippi and Illinois. They will they'll come in on other types of materials, like I said, the soil associated with nursery plants and so on. So probably don't have good enough ways of keeping them out, but our climate is such that they're unlikely to survive if they got here.
I just remember once, like 5 years ago, I had been to New Zealand before, and they were complaining about getting grapes from California down there because they were finding black widow spiders in the in the grapes down there, and I just think, are we in for more species? Now we've got the Asian carp in our river here.
Certainly.
How many more species are we going to get in the next 50 years?
Well, certainly we're set up to get more and more of those. We have the more we import our goods and the more that we have is the more likely it is. My understanding is of the containerized goods that come into this country, only somewhere around 1% to 2% of them are actually inspected very thoroughly, and that's due to how much in a way we want to have them inspected. In other words, how much we want to pay for taxes to have them inspected. And so that all relates to it, and the more we import goods, the more we see of it. In early parts of this country and before this country was formed, most of our imported pests came from Europe, but that's because most of our stuff came from Europe. Now we're getting stuff from China and the Far East, and now all you got to do is read the labels on your stuff you buy, and you know we're bringing in stuff from there, so that's probably how they're getting in. So it's whoever we trade with, and if we start trading with Africa, and you expect to see a bunch of African bugs start to show up, or South America, or wherever. So certainly worldwide movement of pests is a problem. Countries all over the world try to keep a handle on it, but the amount of material that's moved and traded is so vast that keeping them out is very, very difficult.
All right. One more caller, and that would be in Mattoon, line 2. Hello.
Yes. You were talking a little while ago about the Asian ladybugs.
Uh-huh.
I have not seen the traditional red ones. What has happened to them?
The traditional red ones are still around. They seem to be coexisting. That's a spotted lady beetle, which is typically a little bit smaller. than a multicolored Asian lady beetle. I still see them around my place. I see them commonly throughout the state. There's been concern about multicolored Asian lady beetle displacing or essentially outcompeting native lady beetles, and that's still a major concern. But generally, most of the lady beetles we have in Illinois are prairie species and live primarily on lower-growing plants. The multicolored Asian lady beetle was brought in to control pecan aphids because it is primarily an arboreal lady beetle, and we have very, very few species of lady beetles in the state that normally live in trees. The multicolored Asian lady beetle takes advantage of wherever it finds good food, like, say, soybean fields, but generally it appears to not be outcompeting our most common lady beetle species, like the spotted lady beetle, because they don't live in the same space most of the time.
Hey, thanks.
Right, thanks. Mm-hmm. And didn't they think that the multicolored Asian lady beetle couldn't overwinter this far north?
I don't know that they ever thought that. It was unfortunately we had a USDA scientist with some tunnel vision, I think, that brought these in and was thinking of controlling pecan pests, which they did. And as a sidelight, I've had very few reports of tree pests that this insect controls, such as aphids and soft scales and things of this nature on trees and shrubs since this guy got into the state about 12 years ago.
Real quick, I want to talk about controlling Japanese beetles.
Japanese beetle control, if you're trying to apply imidacloprid, multicolored Asian, Bayer Advanced Tree and Shrub Insect Control contains imidacloprid. This is a material that you can apply around the base of your trees and shrubs within 2 feet to bare soil and taken up by the tree to provide season-long control for Japanese beetle. You need to do it at least 2 months before the Japanese beetle adults come out. They'll come out in the latter part of June. Go back, do your math. You better get it on by the end of this week.
All right. Thanks very much. Appreciate it. Phil Nixon, he's extension specialist in crop sciences, and from time to time he is on the program to answer questions about insect pests. And I suppose in the meantime, people have these kind of questions, they can get in touch with their local extension person. And if that person can answer the question,
blows them away, they contact
call
me.
You.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.